Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Like so many young New Zealanders, Emily Perkins did her time in Britain, and that's where she reached for the setting of Novel About My Wife, which won the 2009 Montana Medal for Fiction this week. The book was so successful, said the judge's convener, that she has, in a sense, recolonised English literature. She's with us now. Emily, congratulations.
Hello. Yeah, thank congratulations.
You. Thanks a lot.
Now, what did you make of that comment about recolonising English literature? Does that chime with what you thought you were doing?
Well, I mean, no, I wasn't setting out to do that. I'm perfectly happy to be interpreted as having done it, though. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a tradition in English literature of a sort of class-oriented novel, and there are aspects of my novel that address that, but I'm hoping from my outsider's perspective. It's sort of like I'm embodying that neurotic English middle class kind of mentality in order to cast a different sort of light on it.
Because that is one of the things that strikes you when you go to Britain as an outsider, is that this class system that you've heard about actually exists,
yeah.
And the people are different.
Yeah, no, it really does. And the characters in the novel are, I mean, they're sort of, especially the man who's the narrator, is relentlessly middle class, but in order to maintain his kind of standards, he's got to buy a house in, you know, a more working class neighbourhood, and he's really out of his comfort zone with that. But he's got a lot of that anxiety, a sort of morbid fear of the underclass, which I think is quite common there. And I guess I find, you know, it's good material for getting that sense of paranoia and looming threat, but it's also quite funny because, of course, his real problems come from much closer to home.
To what extent is setting a novel in London about sales, you know, about getting published in London, about being, you know, having a wider market that you can sell to? Because, I mean, I'd suggest that, you know, when you're writing about New Zealand stories about New Zealand, that's all very well and good, but it might not resonate so well overseas.
Well, I don't think I agree with that, because if you look at books that really take off through word of mouth, they are set the world over. I mean, Mr. Pip is a classic example of, by Lloyd-Jones, of something that can be set in one of the most remote parts of the world, or most unexamined parts of the world, that has struck a chord with people everywhere. And this book was set in London. I'd been living there for, I'd say, 10 years when I started writing it, and it had taken me that long, really, to feel confident about setting a novel there. I'd set short stories there, but I just wanted it to not feel like I was reaching for anything, to feel really natural in terms of the setting. And by that time, I thought, oh, yeah, you know, I know what I'm talking about. So all my writing life, really, up until that point, apart from studying at Victoria, had been in London. And so it's kind of interesting for me now. I've been back here for 4 years, and I'm working on two different projects, and one is set in a kind of non-specified place, but it jumps around different countries, and a lot of it is New Zealand. And another one set partly in London and partly in Albania. So, I don't know. I guess I'm feeling a little bit more like I can move around the globe now.
Do you think when you write, though, an urban novel like this, where it is so much about the landmarks and the places and the train stations and the pubs, it does help where you can draw on a really wide audience who understand where that is? I mean, as can people say, setting it in Wellington, if you're talking about wandering up Cuba Street, that doesn't automatically resonate for those people.
Well, no, it doesn't. But then, I mean, as you no doubt will have done, I grew up on, you know, this side of the world reading literature about other parts of the world, and, you know, I thought Cambridge Circus was a circus and all that kind of thing, like, for a long time, and you get you create your own pictures of what these places are like. So I suppose that's one of the things that I wanted to kind of look at in the book, the fact that although the character Tom is a Londoner and he sees himself as this fairly urbane guy, he's actually much more parochial than a lot of people who come from smaller places, who are used to having to look out. You know, we're used to reinterpreting those big landmarks for ourselves, even when we've never been to them.
Yeah, and I found that quite a lot with London. Is that they believe that there's nowhere else to go. That
this is the apex. Yeah, apart from New York, of course. They're all like, if you can make it in New York, you're really doing well in London.
But writing in a male voice, how challenging was that for
you? Oh, well, that was really fun. Like, that was great fun, and it took me a while to work out that the story should be told from his point of view. Yeah. I had made quite a few false starts writing it from different points of view and third person and that sort of thing. And then I, just through sort of, you know, you kind of write your way into this realization that, yeah, it ought to be the husband who was kind of telling this story. And then, of course, it was just like so much fun to, I mean, what were the fun things about it? They were things like, but it's to do with the kind of man he is. He's not a particularly compassionate man. He doesn't, I mean, he adores his wife, but he's not very sort of PC or anything like that. And I guess just writing somebody who's unashamedly without compassion was kind of fun.
He seems to be quite dismissive in things as well. I mean, he refers to, I think there's one bit where you refer to the sort of guy that cooks Thai food or something like that for somebody, you know, just in that box over there.
Yeah, and again, maybe that's a function of coming from a very populated culture. You get used to compartmentalising people and using a sort of cultural, social shorthand. So he'll talk about television actors, or he'll talk about the kind of man who cooks for his wife, or the kind of man who wears a sling with the baby in it and that kind of thing. And these are types, you know. I mean, they're types that you see in much greater quantities in bigger places.
It scared me a little bit that you seem to know so much about the way that men's brains
really?
Work. How much research
what
did you
have? What was scary about that?
Just the amount that you knew, Emily. Okay. how much research did you have to do
on that? A lifetime of research, yeah. I don't think I asked any specific questions. Like, I thought people, you know, guys would tell me. I mean, obviously, men were reading it before it was being published, and thought they'd tell me if I've got, you know, any glaring problems there.
So you didn't sit down and do interviews?
No, I didn't. No, I've lived it.
In terms of the book has been out for over a year now, and it's just this week won the award. Does it have a good sort of give it a nice second life, if you will?
Yeah, it really does. I think, I mean, that's the wonderful thing about the Montanas. And actually, you know, you can make the argument for prizes in general. They, you know, bring people's attention to what's around and what's out there. And it's great. There's definitely a sort of increased interest and level of awareness and reorders of the book, and it's reprinting and stuff.
And
so
it's got a nice
cool.
big sticker on the front of
got
it
got a
now.
Nice big sticker, which happens to go with the jacket, so I'm really happy about that.
Yeah. You teach writing as well. So
yeah.
Is it still the case that there's not a living in writing books?
I teach creative writing part-time, and I really enjoy doing it. And, yeah, it's good to have something that is like a regular gig. So I mean I kind of cobble together a living from various writing related activities.
TV show too, of course.
And the Good Word, which is the program we do about books. And it's probably fair to say that I wouldn't just be surviving on my fiction if that was all I was doing. But I kind of feel really lucky that there are these other things that interest me too. They're all in the same area.
This book was published in England as well. I mean, how's it been received over there? I mean, this is, I imagine markets like England and America are really what you want to crack to be able to retire on this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many writers actually can do that. It's really interesting, even with writers with big profiles who we would expect would have, you know, sort of enormous sales. I mean, the figures for literary fiction are still kind of on the small side. And I heard something, I was just back there in May, and I was talking to a publisher who said that, you know, books are still selling in large quantities, but fewer books. So the range is smaller. They're selling in bigger numbers than they ever have before. But readers are becoming more conservative about the range of books that they'll buy, which is a shame, obviously. And I hope that it's not a trend that's going to last for a long time in publishing or in readers' sort of choices. I mean, they're dictated to a lot by the booksellers, which are also becoming more and more centralised. And I've gone off on a total tangent because I, you know, I care about all this stuff, obviously, and it affects everything when you're a writer and a reader. In terms of England and America, yeah, they're much bigger markets, so even a smaller print run there is, you know.
Yeah.
What are you going to do if someone wants an audiobook of this?
Oh, there is an audiobook of
it.
I know, they sent it to me.
In a male voice.
In a male voice. And they got some actor to do it. I haven't dared listen to it. I mean, there's no way. I can't listen to it, you know. But it's great. It looks like one of those proper audiobooks.
Because I was going to say, I mean, the novel must be one of unlike, say, music and very other, where you're actually immune from the ravages of the internet, aren't you? I mean, I don't imagine...
Oh, no, you're not.
No, people are downloading your books
I know something happened a while ago where there was a chapter, or it's not written in chapters, but a segment was included in a festival promotion when I was one of several authors that a festival in the UK was... sort of highlighting last year, and accidentally the whole novel found its way onto this.
But people will actually print it out and
well, you wouldn't think you would. I mean, you'd think you wouldn't bother, eh? You'd just go and buy the book, I would hope.
Yeah.
But it's definitely the internet's an issue that publishers are facing, and it's changing times, and it's really interesting.
Mm. Yeah, well, there was quite a fuss over, the read out loud facility on the Kindle, for example, and the Writers Guild in America was angry about that.
Anyway, we digress. Thank you so much for coming in, Emily. Congratulations once again on the Montana Medal. The book is called Novel About My Wife, and I can tell you it's having read as much as I could in the last couple of days. It's fantastic, and I'm definitely going to finish it off.
Thanks, Damien. Thanks, Russell.
After the break, Magic with Mushrooms and Shane Carter from Dimmer.